Welcome to Hello Vancouver. I'm your host, Temple Lentz. We have got a fantastic show for you today. We're going to hear from the two founders of the Office Moms and Dads program, which is a program for kids in the foster care system. We're going to talk with Ronnie Noyes about her DIY marketing center. And we are also going to hear about NW Cave, the National Women's Coalition Against Violence and Exploitation, and what they do, as well as one of their programs, The Gift of Lift. We also have music from the Italian-influenced band Umbra Scatu, and we'll hear from the community calendar. Thanks so much for joining us. This is Hello Vancouver. I'm here today with Kim Carew and Sarah DeJarle, co-founders of Office Moms and Dads. Kim and Sarah, thank you so much for joining me today.
Thanks for having us.
So just to get started, tell me, what is the Office Moms and Dads program?
The Office of Moms and Dads program provides child care for kids who are entering foster care, kids who have just been removed from their homes or a situation where they can't be anymore. And while they're waiting in the office, there's a lot of downtime, and it's a very scary time for them. And so we provide on-call volunteers who can sort of drop everything at the drop of a hat and come down and hang out with them and make it a little bit happier.
Wow. So I want to ask, you know, why this started. In your description of it, it sounds pretty logical, but I guess my question would be, so this sort of function didn't exist already?
So prior to this, it would be the social worker doing that.
Oh.
And so when we removed a child and, you know, there's someone looking for a placement for the child, the social worker who does the removal is the one supervising the child while looking for placement, while writing court reports and doing all the other tasks related to a removal of a child.
So if we can provide a volunteer to do that, that frees the social worker to do their job.
Right.
And it keeps the child away from the discussion that the social worker is having with prospective foster parents. Because when you call a foster parent, you have to describe the child.
Yeah. You don't really want to do that in front of the child.
Correct. And if the foster parent's saying no, then this child is hearing the message that they're not wanted.
Oh, wow.
So on top of being removed, that experience is happening as well. So,
And you started this program here in Vancouver. And you were telling me before we got started here that now you're in 19 different locations?
Yeah. So it's exploded just over the last year, I would say. We've had the privilege of opening 19 new offices, or we have 19 total offices throughout the state of Washington. And we've actually had some interest from about five other states in replicating this program. So it's taken off like wildfire.
And so are these programs that are operated, like, is this a program through the state or are you a separate nonprofit?
We're completely separate. We're a ragtag team of people, volunteers. So we're a nonprofit.
The program occurs in the state office because that's where the children are located.
So we work with the state.
So what are your positions? Do you work in the foster care system? Is that how you developed an interest in this?
Well, I'm a child protective services investigator, and I've been in child welfare for almost 10 years.
I'm on
essentially the front lines removing children and placing them in foster care and seeing this day to day.
And I've been a foster parent for 7 years. And so I was actually in the office for a meeting, just a random meeting. And I met Kim there at the office. And I just started kind of throwing this idea out that I'd had, you know, to say, what if community members were to come in and provide childcare? What would that look like? How would we do that? And so we were instant friends and just kind of took off with this partnership. And we had a handful of sweet little ladies, about five ladies that helped us start. And they were just amazing. And we all just threw in and kind of developed the program as we went.
When we created this program, we created it for the Vancouver office because we saw the need there. We weren't really focusing on going statewide or meeting the needs of other counties in Washington. But, once we saw how successful it was and how well it was working, we wanted to share it with the rest of the state. And the administration wanted this to be going throughout the state.
Right.
So
the administration has really come after it, wanting it in every single office in the state.
Well, that's fantastic. And yeah. I can see why.
It's exciting.
What a need. Mm-hmm. And being able to fill that is fantastic.
Mm-hmm. And it doesn't take resources from the state. Mm-hmm. To be able to make this amazing program work. Usually it requires significant resources and support from financial support. And we've been able to create this program where it's purely volunteer based.
Wow. So about how many kids in any given day or week come through?
Well, I mean, it really depends. Mm-hmm. It depends on which office you're looking at, the different populations that we work with. Mm-hmm. We're more of an urban setting in Vancouver versus maybe Skamania County, which is sure. more of a rural setting. We've had weeks where we've had about 6 to 7 kids coming into care, and we've had some weeks where only 1 or 2, and we've had weeks where kids don't come into care. Mm-hmm. So it just really depends on what the agency is notified about in the community and what's happening in our community. So it's really hard to say on any given day.
I would say we log about an average of 40 volunteer hours per month in this office alone. Okay. So that's not accounting for the rest of the offices.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So what would it look like? So what would the typical, if there is a typical day for one of the children and one of the volunteers that you have, what would that look like? What's the situation from them walking in to leaving?
When our volunteers get here or at the office, they don the apron. So we have an apron that says Office Mom, or we have an apron that says Office Dad, mm-hmm. and that's our uniform. And anybody who wears the apron is treated like royalty because the social workers love us and they're very nice to us. we grab the children and go find usually a visit room is where mm-hmm. we care for them, and so we'll play games, and we'll find snacks for them. They have snacks in the office, and drinks, and, diaper changes and that sort of thing all kind of happen in one room where we're mm-hmm. playing. We have been given a bit of flexibility and are able to, under certain circumstances, take the kids to the park because it's just a block away. Mm-hmm. So that's really nice when we can get out and get some fresh air. But sometimes we just watch a movie or, chill out. Sometimes the kids need a nap. So we'll turn the lights out, get them under, a little quilt and a pillow on the couch and let them hang out. But, yeah, it's really just providing supervision. We also make sure they have a couple of sets of clean clothes mm-hmm. and luggage that's provided by the KMR Foundation.
We have other items donated at the kids' care boxes that are created mm-hmm. by community members that are for each child, and it's age and gender specific. Mm-hmm. From a social worker's perspective, like I can talk about today, I was walking down the hallway and a little, probably like 6-year-old little boy was running up and down the hallway and the office mom was standing back there. Well, he was 4. He was a big 4-year-old. And he was running and she was standing there and they're just playing, mm-hmm. running down the hallway, getting some energy out. So that's what we see. We see office mm-hmm. moms with kids in tow. Walking around, getting snacks, going to the bathroom.
This little guy was there from 8:30 this morning to about 5 o'clock, I think.
Oh, wow. That's a long day.
It was a long day for a 4-year-old.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
For any kid.
What's their state of mind when they get there?
The children or the office moms?
The children.
It varies.
It really varies.
It really varies. But something that's always surprising to me is that they are more than happy to go with a stranger. Anybody with a smile on their face, they'll go to. Mm. They want, pick me up, anybody that's going to care for them, they're happy to go to. So that's always strange,
Yeah.
So and I think part of that is when a social worker is working with children, we work around safety and we talk about safety and mm-hmm. who's safe, and social workers are safe people and my office is a safe place to be. And so the child understands that my role is to be safe and I'm passing this child over to this office mom. So the mm-hmm. child gets this, not by stating that this is a safe person, but I think that there is
By proxy.
Yeah, by proxy. There's this idea that this is a safe person. Sometimes kids present as though it's fine, and you never really know how a child processes those things. And I think, you know, what's familiar or what's unfamiliar for a child, a lot of kids just kind of go with the flow. I think it's the hardest is when it's a sibling group and mm-hmm. we have to split the kids up because we don't have enough homes for children. And I think once the kids start seeing their siblings go off is when then it may hit them emotionally.
That's when it gets emotional for everybody.
Absolutely.
Even the office moms and dads.
And the workers.
It just tears your heart out to have to separate the siblings, but we have to most mm-hmm. of the time because we don't have enough foster homes in this county. So you put them where you can find a bed.
And I think one of the things we do with kids is to try to make it like a normal thing and not like mm-hmm. a big scary thing. So we don't really dwell on the feelings mm-hmm. as much as we try to distract them. And so we have all these things in the office, like the care boxes that are these box, like they're like the photo boxes. Mm-hmm. filled like you have to have a rubber band to cover, so that kind of like distracts kids from what's really going on.
Yeah.
And we have the TV there with some kids movies, so really we don't want kids to be sitting there and feeling depressed and mm-hmm. sad and scared. And if it weren't for these office moms and dads coming in and entertaining them, that might be what happens. Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. I think one of the benefits of having office moms and dads is that it's the ability to distract a child from what's really going on around them.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. What kind of training do the volunteers get?
Well, we have a 1.5-hour training that everybody goes through initially when they sign on, and then of course a background check and just the typical mm-hmm. stuff like that. But yeah, it's just that 1.5-hour training, and then as we've grown, we've seen a need to really bolster that training so that we're all on the same page across the state. So we're actually gonna start training videos via YouTube, mm-hmm. And it'll be a closed channel, so you have to like have the password and stuff. But that way, every volunteer will go through a training at least once a year to keep their skills fresh.
Mm-hmm. Fantastic.
Yeah. And we have pretty strict policies, and that's part of what my role was, is in order to ensure that it aligns with the department's policies mm-hmm. In regards to what is appropriate and what cannot occur. And essentially all office moms are doing is distracting and nurturing kids, and
yep.
while they're in their role, they're considered a mandated reporter, so if anything comes up, they are mandated to report it to the social worker mm-hmm. but they're not at all allowed to question the child mm. or try to gather any information on their own.
Yeah, so we don't go digging ever.
Sure.
we distract and entertain.
And I think really the tenor of the people who come in to volunteer are wanting to nurture and take care mm-hmm. of kids, are not looking to try and get that kind of information. We've never had any issues mm-hmm. at all.
About how many volunteers do you have working, let's say, in Vancouver?
In Vancouver, we have right around 30.
Oh, wow.
And that ebbs and flows, you know, mm-hmm. because people's lives change and their schedules change. And so some of them will have to drop off the roster for various reasons, mm-hmm. got a new job or just things. But we get fresh new volunteers just about every month, at least a handful of mm-hmm. them.
That's great. How do you find them?
Word of mouth.
They find us.
Facebook. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Great. Well, so, and if somebody is interested, if they're listening and they say, that sounds like something I really want to be a part of, how would they get in touch with you guys?
Probably the easiest way would be to message us on the Facebook page.
Okay.
So you would just search Office Moms and Dads on Facebook, and that will come up with our statewide page. And if you just message us, that comes to me.
Fantastic. Mm-hmm. So what are some of the situations that would lead to a child being in the office for 8 hours?
It's our lack of foster homes. Mm-hmm. So when a child is brought into protective custody, we have a specific person who starts calling our foster homes, and we have a roster, and we start going down the roster. And for whatever reason, some kids can't be placed, and they end up having to be moved out of county.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and so some kids are split up, siblings are split up and moved into different counties. Mm-hmm. We can't not place a child because we don't have room. And so really my hope is that through office moms and people volunteering, they come into the office, they're actually seeing what it looks like. They see a child coming to care. They see the social workers and what they're going through. And hopefully they will go to their people, and maybe out of one shift, two people are interested in maybe becoming a foster parent. Mm-hmm. And my hope is that office moms will lead to recruitment of foster homes.
Is there a typical length of stay for a foster child in a foster home?
In a foster home? Mm-hmm. Oh, boy. There's so many variables. That's a hard one to answer.
It's a really hard question to answer because there could be, you know, there's different ways that children come into custody. Mm-hmm. So sometimes law enforcement places them into custody and we're able to mitigate whatever that risk was and be able to return the child home. And sometimes we aren't. And mm-hmm. so we have to keep kids in longer. And sometimes we have to terminate their rights and make them adoptable. And so it's really hard. And I get this question all the time. How long mm-hmm. does it take? I don't know. Yeah. It's really, it's up to the situation. And some foster homes aren't able to keep kids for long-term for their own reasons and maybe are doing an overfill to support the sibling, or maybe this foster parent can only take this kid for 3 days, you know, because they're leaving town or whatever. And so it's on both ends. So it's a variable from the department as well as from the foster home.
Mm-hmm. And there are cases, a lot of cases actually, that end up, the kids end up going to a suitable relative. Mm-hmm. So then that's a different category. Yeah.
Right.
I was going to say, too, that this program really has acted as a recruiting tool, which has been an unexpected outcome, mm-hmm. But a very happy one. And that is getting probably as much attention from other aid organizations throughout the state. Mm-hmm. For example, we are good partners with our Fostering Together liaisons, mm-hmm. and Fostering Together is contracted through the state for recruitment and retention of foster homes. And so they've also shaken hands with us saying, we like what you're doing. We like that it's getting people in the door.
Yeah.
Of course, I don't know if I'm supposed to be speaking for them, but they've been so helpful in starting all these new programs and getting leadership in place mm-hmm. for us, 'cause they're the boots on the ground in other places. I don't know people in Seattle, you know, and Bellingham and, yeah. and that sort of thing, but they've been instrumental. They do. They already have the network up there. So they've been so instrumental in getting the volunteer coordinator in place and, you know, helping us set up this leadership Great. Structure. So because it's acting as a recruiting tool. Mm-hmm. In Vancouver alone, we've had 5 foster families come from Office Moms and Dads.
Wow, that's a lot.
It's exciting. It is. Yeah, it's so good. And we always do a happy dance when
we're happy to see those volunteers yes. leave.
Yep. That's a good reason. Yeah. That's a good thing.
And also from the department's perspective, this has become a retention tool for social workers. Mm-hmm. I think anybody can agree that it's one of the hardest jobs out there to be a child welfare social worker with yeah. the workload, and it's hard to keep good social workers because mm-hmm. it's hard work.
Yeah.
But this has become something that supports social workers and supports people who do this really hard frontline work to stay working because it's one less intense task that they have to do.
And it shows them that their community really does care. Mm-hmm. When you've got random community members volunteering to help do, you know, part of their job, like, we're really just coming in and bolstering them and caring for them, the social workers. Mm-hmm. Because they're doing the hard work.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And so, yes, that's something that we're passionate about is caring for social workers and, of course, providing the nurturing environment for kids coming from a traumatic situation. Mm-hmm. So it's a multifaceted organization.
Are there any future plans? Are there directions you're looking to go with it?
Well, yeah. I mean, we would like to see an Office Moms and Dads program in every child welfare office in this state. Mm-hmm. We would also love to get to the point where we can share this with other states.
What would it take to get there?
I don't know. You let me know.
You tell us. Well, I think as far as statewide, I mean, it's just really word of mouth. I mean, we're broken up into three major regions. So the east side of the state is one whole region. And I'm not as connected to that region as I am connected to the west side. Mm-hmm. We're slowly making our way on the east side. Mm-hmm. And there's a couple of offices that are so small that may not require the program. As far as nationally, it would be an interesting thing to look at because office moms' policies are based upon department policies. Mm-hmm. So different states have different laws and different states have different cultures. And so you will see a different child welfare program in Arkansas than you're seeing in mm-hmm. Washington State. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. so it's really about how to maintain the integrity of our program, but also provide that program in Arkansas to maintain the integrity of their child welfare program. So it's not something that we are looking at right now, but it's mm-hmm. definitely something that we would like to see happen and we'll be creative about
it. We're taking
it
day at a time. One day at a time.
And I mean, that's the thing. Like, this wasn't never started to be this huge thing. We really saw this need in this office and said, let's do it. And we did it alone in Clark County for 2 years.
Yeah, just about. Mm-hmm.
Before other counties started noticing.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, and Kelso was next. And mm-hmm. so it sort of went geographically. Mm-hmm. And Portland actually has several office moms and dads programs, too.
Oh, great.
Uh-huh. In the Tri-County area. Mm-hmm. They're a bit, they kind of do their own thing. I mean, it's the same exact idea.
They were trained by us.
They were trained mm-hmm. by us, yeah. So we consider them a sister program, but really have nothing else to do with them. And anyway, so it really spread geographically mm-hmm. first, and then it just took off. Via social media, actually. Mm-hmm. So
excellent. Well, and again, if anybody wants to find out more, follow Office Moms and Dads and see what's next. They're on Facebook, so just search Office Moms and Dads. And Kim Carew and Sarah DeJarlay, thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So you may already know my next guest, Ronnie Noyes. Maybe you've read one of her three books or found her on Google as the number one marketing coach in organic searches worldwide from 2006 through 2015. And she's still in the top five now. You might have seen her on TV or read her articles in business magazines or noticed that her DIY marketing center was once named best in business in the marketing category by the Vancouver Business Journal. Or it could be that you've never heard of her. Either way, you're going to hear plenty now. Ronnie, thank you for joining us.
Temple, it is a pleasure and a delight to be here.
So tell me, what is the DIY Marketing Center?
Well, the DIY Marketing Center is a training and support organization for small businesses. Specifically, we specialize in home-based, women-owned startup businesses. And we're not talking about funded businesses. I was just reading an article today in Inc. about seven women talking about how hard they worked to fund their businesses and how they got $85 million in angel investing. Most of my clients are in their second career. They're, mm-hmm. most of them are women over 40, and most of them are starting up with under $200. And they are starting a business based on their passion, their values, and their commitment to bring something wonderful to the world. Now, that wonderful thing could be dog walking. It could be coaching. It could be a new organic shampoo or something along those lines. What they all have in common, though, is that they have pretty much no monetary resources, but they have to scrape an existence out of their wits and their ideas, and that's where I come in.
Well, that's fascinating because especially as you're starting a business, you need to let people know you're out there so mm-hmm. that you can actually succeed. Mm-hmm. But if you don't have the resources to do that, how would somebody who's just starting out get themselves out there and make themselves known?
Well, actually, there are a ton of free resources out there, and I've pulled them together. So what I've done on my website on the DIY Marketing Center is I have free webinar that talks about how to start marketing your business. And I've also got a checklist that people can download. But the things that you want to put together to become known. And what's very exciting is in another article, I've also published a list of free things. So you can get free business cards, you can get a free website, and of course all your social media profiles are free. There are also a ton of free tools such as images and photo editors and things like that so that you can prepare an entire social media campaign for $0.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and you can get free phone, you can get pretty much free everything if that's how you, if you really need to bootstrap your business.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. That is incredible. So so how does it work? What do you have, classes? Do you have workshops? What do people do?
Well, I have a lot of things. I have classes and workshops for the public, but also my clients take those. But the majority of the people that I work with, my ongoing clients, are involved in sort of a membership thing. Because here's the deal. Temple, when people start their businesses, there are really three things that keep them from being successful in the beginning. So it's not that they are not motivated. It's just that they don't know really, number one, what to do to market their business. They have no idea what's important. And there are a lot of people out there who are going to tell them, oh, yes, all you have to do is buy my fabulous Yellow Pages advertising and you'll be rich and famous.
Right.
Not true. And $1,200 a month, people can't afford it. A lot of people who have a financial interest in selling people services are going to say this is the only thing you need. And the truth is most entrepreneurs need a lot of stuff. And they can't afford to dump a lot of money into branding themselves and a website and stuff like that. They need to be very conservative about that. So number one, they have to figure out what they're going to do. And it always starts with a plan. I suggest putting together your options and resources. And actually, of course, after focusing on the golden triangle of who is your market, who's ready, willing, and able to pay, stay, and refer. Your message, what is it you have to say to people to attract their attention and to invite them into your world. And finally, media. What is the media that's going to convey that message?
Yeah.
So after all that stuff gets pulled together, that is the what to do. Then comes the question, okay, I know what I'm going to do. How do I do it? And that's all people go, they say, I was trained as a massage therapist. I don't know how to market. I don't know how to make my own website. I don't know how to copyright. I don't know any of these things. And I don't know the financial piece. So then that's the second hurdle. And then the very last hurdle is getting it done. Because how do you do all these things? People go from having jobs typically, like I'm really good at X. But all of a sudden, when you are an entrepreneur, you have to do everything, chief cook and bottle washer. And it's what Michael Gerber calls the administration piece, because or the entrepreneur piece. A lot of us are really good at the technical piece. Like, I can cut hair all day. I'm fabulous. But in terms of doing the administration and the strategic work, we got nothing.
Yeah, absolutely. And if it's all you, you're the only one who's going to be doing it. So
That's a lot of hats.
It is. And that's a lot of stress for somebody who's just starting something new.
Yes. And this is why so many businesses go out of business. I read a really interesting report to the governor right here in the state of Washington in 2007. There was a joint report to the governor from the the Department of Labor, and the IRS was involved, and all these different agencies, so state, federal, and even some city agencies up in the Seattle area, and they did a study of a Washington entrepreneur community, and they looked at why did businesses fail and why did they thrive. So they came up with 8 reasons why they failed. One, the least of it being the amount that if a business in Washington makes $250,000, they have to pay X amount for health care. I can't remember what all that's called. But so that was a problem because that floor really bugged people. Like when they got up there, they ceased being profitable. Mm-hmm. So that was a weird thing. The other thing was shrinkage. And not so much you would think, oh, theft? No. Yeah, I was having your brother-in-law do your taxes or your books employee theft. Those two things can just rob a small business of a lot of their cash flow. But then numbers 1 through 6 were all marketing. So basically, most businesses simply fail to find a market. They don't know who's hungry, who wants to buy what they have.
Right.
And people go out there and talk about it. You have to buy from me because I'm wonderful and I'm a good person and I have integrity and, you know, you're killing babies if you don't buy from me. But what they fail to recognize is they have to know who's who's hungry? What problem does it solve? Why will people be motivated to buy? And you want to pull all of those factors together and wrap it up in a message and deliver it. But most entrepreneurs don't, because we don't have the sort of entrepreneurial education that we need to be an entrepreneurial society.
And so you offer these opportunities for people to learn, kind of just, they can do an entire course. They could take a specific workshop.
Yes. And as a matter of fact, I frequently suggest when people come in to see me that they take advantage of some of the many resources that are available here in town. We've got the Small Business Development Center, the SBDC. We've got SCORE, the Service Corps Retired Executives. We have a whole bunch of really great free resources. But what most people are lacking is they're lacking the ability to pull it all together. And that's where I come in with my DIY Marketing Center. We're not the be-all and end-all for everybody, but for a certain sort of person who's got a great work ethic and who's completely committed to this business and needs the support as they're pulling these resources together and learning and deploying them, that's what we provide.
So you have a number of workshops coming up that, yes, because the dates are always changing, people can find them on your website,
yes,
which is
DIYMarketingCenter.com.
So you can look there, and you have a wide variety of classes and workshops. And I was looking at one of the ones coming up. You said something interesting that I want to ask you about.
Yes.
So I'm asking you for free advice right now. That's what I'm doing.
Please do.
But you said, in one of the things you had about like making your elevator speech and, mm-hmm, your pitch, mm-hmm, you said not to use the word I too much, mm-hmm, when you're talking about yourself, mm-hmm, which I thought was really interesting, because if you're talking about yourself, wouldn't you want to use the word I?
Oh, that's a great question, Temple, because you're not really talking about yourself.
Oh.
See, what we are looking at is people are really interested in themselves. Networking is like dating.
Mm-hmm.
So let's say that you wanted...
That makes it sound terrible.
I know. But it's easier because you don't have to be monogamous usually. Well, maybe you do if you have a job. So when you go networking, what you want to think about is how can I be of service to others? Because most people think of networking as going out and telling a lot of people what I do and what I want. And the truth is, networking is a process of connecting to serve, share, and support. And what we want to do is create relationships that we can add value to someone and they can add value to us. So if you're a job seeker, what I would recommend is go to meetings to network, and you can even network at church and stuff like that. But it isn't a matter of shaking hands and saying, hi, I'm Ronnie Noyes, I'm looking for a job, can you help me? It's a matter of finding out about other people and seeing, is there something you know that can help them, someone you know you could introduce them to, or do they have a career path that you like and that you would like to emulate? Because later you can call them up and say, hey, Temple, it was really great meeting you, and you said something super interesting about your career path, and I was wondering if you'd be willing to give me some advice, and would you be willing to get together, maybe I buy you a cup of coffee and you could tell me about your career and what advice you would give someone like me who's just starting out. Would that be okay? Most people are like, yes, I would love to, because I want to hear me talk. And this is sort of the Ben Franklin thing. Do you remember how Ben Franklin said to get rid of an enemy?
No.
He had this strategy because he was running for office and this one guy absolutely hated him, blah, blah, blah. So Ben's like, how can I make this guy like me? And so he asked to borrow one of the guy's books for his library. He said, you've got such a wonderful book. It's a rare gem and I would really like to be able to read it and talk to people about it. May I borrow it from you? And so he essentially acknowledged that this guy had great taste and had a wonderful thing, and he was quite gracious enough to lend it to Ben Franklin, and then became one of Franklin's staunchest supporters and advocates because he appreciated that Franklin appreciated him. We love people who love us.
Yes. I don't have terribly many of those, but I hear that it's great. Well, you know, one thing, so you, when you got here, you had a couple of tickets to a workshop that you do. So why don't you describe it?
Yes. And so they are tickets. I'm leaning over there. They're tickets to my networking workshops. Now, the business networking workshop happens in odd months. So that would be like July and September and November. Mm-hmm. And the business networking workshop is the basics. And this is, we talk about the 9 networking essentials, and which include, well, I'll give you a little spoiler alert. One of them is how to shake hands.
Now, which is really important.
Yes, it is. So what do you think of someone who has a bad handshake?
It's terrible, and you never think right of them again.
Yes. And I share six of my least favorites. Although, I have to admit, I do have a fondness for the Bill Clinton. But,
Is the Bill Clinton the clasp? Is it the yes. reaching clasp?
Yeah, well, it's the clasp, and then the hand creeps up the arm. Yeah, lots of really crazy handshakes. Of course, the dreaded My Lady.
Ugh.
So it's just they give you their fingertips and like they expect you to kiss their knuckles.
Right.
Or the one that I've seen the petite little gals give, these little 98-pound weakling chicks. They give me the claw because they want to make sure that I know they're strong. They've been working out. Like, and that's unpleasant. And then, of course, there's the crusher. And a mm-hmm. lot of people, oh, man, actually a gal just bruised me. giving me a crusher, she was very tough. And then there was a new one recently.
Oh.
I'm calling it the pincher. This gal pressed her thumb so far into the back of my hand that I had a bruise for 6 days. 6 days.
That's not right.
I know. I actually pointed it out to her, and she thanked me for doing that because she's a wonderful person, and she's out in the community, and she thanked me for showing, for letting her know. But this woman was just, I was like, whoa, tiger, and she looked at me like I was insane, and I said, that really hurt, and I know that you don't mean it because you're a wonderful, warm person. How did that happen? And it turns out that she works with a lot of very big, very masculine men who express their masculinity by shaking each other's hands in a really tough way. And she doesn't have the hand strength of everybody else, but she's got some killer thumbs from texting, baby. And so she can give you a thumbing like you've never had. Anyway, my hand, 6 days.
Wow.
For that bruise.
Wow.
6 days. So we talk about the appropriate handshake mm-hmm. and also what people think of you with the different handshakes.
So, Ronnie, thank you so much for joining us.
It has been my pleasure, Temple. Thank you so much for having me.
I have loved talking to you. And make sure that you check out DIYMarketingCenter.com to find out everything about what's going on in upcoming workshops and working with Ronnie to perfect your marketing and networking.
Next up, we have a track from local band Umbra Scatu. This Italian-influenced band has a really distinctive sound. And based here in Portland, with members who also live in Vancouver, we were very happy to have them at the live version of Hello Vancouver a year or so ago. This song is a recording from that performance of their song San Francesco Bar.
Hello Vancouver. Mentre due giovani o vecchi la mettono del lavoro che non c'è. Ai 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 ai. Ai ai ai. Arriva il politico di turno. Prego, posso offrirvi un bel caffè? Se mi potrete, potrete anche fumare. Proprio qui nel San Francesco Bar. Yeah.
Welcome back, everybody. I am here with friends of the show, Jim Maines and Nolan Hoshino from High Five Media, and we're going to have the community calendar. Hey, Jim. Hey, Nolan.
Hey, how are you?
How's it going?
Well, we have a bunch of great stuff coming up in Clark County and Southwest Washington here. Coming up in June, at the very beginning of June, is the No More Summit, which was originally scheduled for January, but as you may recall, we had some nasty weather in January, and it got postponed. And this is a summit that's being put on by a number of organizations, including the YWCA and also NW CAVE, which is the North National Women's Coalition Against Violence and Exploitation. And it is a conference that's entirely about fighting against human trafficking and domestic violence. They have got a ton of great speakers. And that's on June 2nd and 3rd at the Hilton in downtown Vancouver. And that's you can get more information at nomoresummit.org. Now, this is something that happens every month, but at the beginning of each month, we have First Fridays in downtowns, and Camas and Vancouver are the two main ones here in Clark County. One of the things that they'll be having at the June downtown Vancouver First Friday, and they actually do this every time, Firehouse Glass downtown does glass blowing demos. So
that's
you can
right.
go in and see how they do it. It's really cool.
And then downtown Camas will have their First Friday, also June 2nd, and they have a poker tour and game night. It's always fun, and check it out.
Yeah, it's kind of cool. I guess they do a poker tour, and you can go and you can get different things at the different businesses and pick up stuff throughout town and get tickets to potentially win something. And rounding it out, we've got the Community Foundation of Southwest Washington having their annual luncheon on June 6th at the Hilton. And this is a neat one because they present both Philanthropist of the Year and Friend of the Foundation Award at this event. And it's just a great way to honor all of the philanthropists here in Southwest Washington.
It's always a great event. If you'd like more information, check out www.cfsww.org.
And, of course, don't miss the next Hello Vancouver June 28th. Yay.
That's right. We got a fun night planned. DJ Noho and I are going to be doing the pre-show. Temple's got already an awesome packed schedule for the main show. It's going to be a blast.
It is. So we hope to see you all at Warehouse 23 on June 28th. And you can find out more about Hello Vancouver at hellovancouver.us. Guys, thanks for joining me.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Next up, we've got a two-parter for you. Show contributor Joe Clemens from KXRW Vancouver interviewed NWK founder Michelle Bart about the work that NWK, the National Women's Coalition Against Violence and Exploitation, about the work they do and an event they have coming up. And separately, I sat down to talk with Michelle Bart and Robin Helm, who also works with NWK and is head of the Gift of Lift program that they operate. And we talked a bit about what the Gift of Lift is. We'll start with Joe's interview and then move right into my interview with Michelle and Robin.
Every year, thousands of men, women, and children are victims of sex trafficking. And while many of us think that this is a problem that only happens in other parts of the world, or that it could never happen to me, the truth is this is becoming an epidemic in communities just like ours. I recently visited the historic Kiggins Theater in downtown Vancouver for a showing of I Am Jane Doe, a film documentary about the pervasiveness of sex trafficking. At the conclusion of the film, there was a Q&A session between the audience and a panel of experts. That's Michelle Bart, the moderator for the panel. Michelle is president of the National Women's Coalition Against Violence and Exploitation, a nonprofit organization based right here in Vancouver that works with local, state, and federal agencies. Together, they inform, educate, and prevent violence and exploitation against women and children. After the panel discussion, I sat down with Michelle to talk more about NW CAVE and the good work that they do in the community. So what is NW CAVE?
We have a dream, a world without violence. And so our focus, our main initiatives are informing the public, being aware, educating them, and prevention.
How do you help people like the ones highlighted in the film?
when we have an issue with a missing child, to educating the media on not to re-victimize a victim when they're being interviewed by the media. So there's a few other programs and services that we also focus on.
NW Cave services are extensive, ranging from assisting with missing persons to cases of bullying and hate crimes, and all other forms of violence and exploitation against women and children. Next, we talked about why Michelle started NW Cave, and like many who work tirelessly on behalf of others, it's personal.
I'm a rape survivor, was raped on Halloween in 1992 in Denver, Colorado, Golden, Colorado, and from that point on, I did everything in my power to participate in organizations like the YWCA's, Soroptimus, etc., that empowers women.
Next, I ask Michelle about the biggest misconceptions that people have about the exploitation of women and children.
That it doesn't happen here. Trying to get people to make a donation or fund a missing persons division, because I don't know if they think that it's not a problem, it doesn't exist, it doesn't happen, or it hasn't impacted them personally.
How can somebody help today?
Find us at nwcave.org. That's nwcave.org. Whether you can share a post or donate a bra, make a contribution, or attend a conference. In the end, it's all benefiting our mission.
According to the U.S. Justice Department, human trafficking is a $9 billion industry that affects about 300,000 kids every year. And for those of you that think it can't happen to me, go to your local theater and check out that film, I Am Jane Doe, and listen to all of the parents that thought the same thing. You can join the conversation and the fight against violence and exploitation by joining NW Cave at the No More Summit this Friday and Saturday, June 2nd and 3rd, at the Hilton Hotel and Conference Center in downtown Vancouver. Listen to keynote speakers Brenda Tracy, Representative Sharon Wiley, and others, and help create greater awareness and action to end domestic violence and sexual assault. Please join us and participate in the No More Summit by registering today at nomoresummit.org and help us fulfill NW Cave's dream, a world without violence.
I sit on the Human Trafficking Task Force for Clark County, and during one of our meet and greets, Robin attended it, and as I do a lot of the time, in order to know what's going on and what people need, you have to be an eavesdropper. So she was in a huddle with people and from the county and stating what she needed. And one of our national partners since 2012 had been Free the Girls, which is a national organization in Colorado and Indiana. And they collect bras. And so I overheard that Robin wanted to donate bras, but Free the Girls, you have to be a nonprofit to partner with them. So I heard that and I'm like, how can we help? We're a partner of theirs already. Kimba's a friend of ours. What can we do? And so that's how this led to be. And it started as a campaign. For 1 year, we thought, okay, let's just do it as a campaign. And then ultimately, it was such a huge success, has made such a huge impact on Clark County, Vancouver, Portland, and across the world, that we were like, let's make it an official partnership, and let's make it an actual official program of NW Cave.
So it's interesting, because I originally found out about NW Cave at one of their Media Matter things that they did at the mall, because I worked for the Clark County Juvenile Court, and we had a few of the girls on my caseload who were involved in trafficking. So I was curious and felt like I needed to educate myself. And that was when I first heard about Free the Girls and thought, that's such a cool organization. But as things happen, it came and went. But then just a month later, I was diagnosed with breast cancer. Mm. and went through a double mastectomy. And that was when I had this day of reckoning with my bra drawer. And as it is when you have something like cancer and you have this, there are so many little losses, and this was a little loss. But I was like, wait, you know, I know what I can do with these bras, because there's a group that collects bras. And actually, if there's me, there's more. And I want to collect it. And so that's when I began looking. I knew I didn't want to start a nonprofit of my own. I wanted to find someone to help me with it. And so after a few months, that was when I went to the Human Trafficking Task Force meeting and ran into Michelle for a second time. And we began to talk and collaborate. And, okay, let's do this. Let's get it started. Who can we get to help? Well, I was going to my plastic surgeon that afternoon, and I said, I'll ask my plastic surgeon, which I did at the end of the appointment, and he reacted in a very unusual way. He started jumping up and down and said, I have just been waiting for you to come along. And he grabbed me by the hand in my little exam cape and hauled me down the hallway to his office manager, Melissa, and said, Robin is going to collect our bras. And so he had tried starting up something to collect and distribute bras and just didn't have the personnel. So he just kept hoping someone would run it for him. And there I was. And so it was a beautiful collaborative effort in coming together. And so in the time that we have been doing it, we've collected over 12,000 bras. And that's in a little over a year and a half.
And then what do you do with them once they're collected?
So what we do with them is we distribute them to as many local organizations and agencies as we can, mm-hmm. anywhere from the high school resource centers to shelters for women. There's a program that helps incarcerated women and women coming out of incarceration, anywhere that is helping women get a fresh start, pretty much. Some women are just trying to fight their way out of poverty, or they've had a rough divorce and they're trying to get back to the workforce, whatever. If there's an agency that says they want bras, we have them for them. Mm-hmm. And then the rest of the bras we send to Free the Girls, mm-hmm. And ship them to them, and then they go out. And what Free the Girls does is a really great program, because they work with women who have been rescued internationally from trafficking. Mm-hmm. They work with the women in their own community. They give them a business plan and a supply of bras, and these women open boutiques. And in these countries, American bras are a luxury item. And so they sell very well, and the women make enough money to support whatever family members they need to support and to go back to school. And so they are really able to get a fresh start and have a new life.
Oh, that's fantastic.
So the balance of the bras go there. And what I love about Free the Girls is every woman has at least a bra or two back in the back of their drawer, mm-hmm. that they're just not getting rid of because they paid good money for it and it's so cute or whatever. And we don't get rid of them. But here's a great thing to do with them. People feel great about giving their bras to help other women. And it gives us an opportunity to talk about these really difficult topics like domestic violence and trafficking to women who are just donating their bras in this incredible recycling project, especially for women. And everybody comes out winning. It's a great program.
So if somebody wants to donate some of their bras, how do they find you?
So we have collection stations all over Vancouver and a few in Portland. And the best place to find out where those donation stations are is to go to our website, giftoflift.org. And there's a list of them there. And some people have already seen our pink bins. Now, if a pink bin is curbside, that's something else. But if a pink bin is in a business, it's collecting bras.
Okay, great.
We're also always looking for organizations that want to do a one-time collection or become a donation site, as well as organization that needs our bras, because we keep looking, but they keep coming out of the woodwork. So we're always looking for both ends of our bargain.
Excellent. And so if folks want more information about how to donate bras, or if they have an organization that needs them, it's giftoflift.org.
That's correct.
Michelle Bart from NW Cave, Robin Helm from Gift of Lift, thank you so much for joining
me. Thank you, Temple.
And now we've got one more song for you from Umbrascatu, the song Tempo from the album of the same name.
And that does it for another episode of Hello Vancouver. Thanks for being here with us. I'm your host, Temple Lentz, and we'll see you next time.